Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. I'm chatting with Mark Chandler. He is a managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also writes the Mark to Market blog. I will post a link to that blog below this interview. Mark, let's recap some of the key events or news events from this last week. The first was the Fed meeting, a lot of eyes on the Fed, but also limited expectations on if the Fed would do anything, and sure enough, they did not do anything. However, Jerome Powell really talked up the markets during his press conference by driving home the fact that he is at least planning on the Fed being very easy, very accommodative, low interest rates, and probably some more QE in the near term, more or less ignoring any potential almost restart to the economy because of these vaccines. Let's start with the Fed meeting. You take away, or what were your main takeaways from what Powell had to say and that market reaction when he was talking of everything seeming to melt up?
Yeah, so I think that you're right. The FOMC meeting, the last big central bank, last Fed meeting of the year. And my general sense is that the Federal Reserve is navigating between the near-term downside risks. I mean, the pandemic is still not under control. We're still getting so pandemic's not in control. And the medium term, though, the upside is elevated. And that's because of the vaccine. And you see this really being expressed in the Fed's forecasts, where they revised up next year's growth as well as 2022's growth. So the message I took away was that the Federal Reserve remained very accommodative, but the bar for them to do something more, that is, I had previously thought they'd get into yield curve control or shifting the buying from the short end or the medium to the longer end, or increasing the size of their operations. I think that they're weathering the storm, and they're going to try to avoid doing more. Or another way to put that is that the bar for them to do more is relatively high. And I say that because the Fed could change their mind, and what could prompt them would be where the economy is much weaker for longer than they're anticipating. And that could be, Powell already admitted essentially that Q1 is going to be impacted by the virus regardless of the vaccine being rolled out. And so I think this is what is driving the market, is that there is some sense from the Fed, from the forecast, that the short term looks bad, but the medium to longer term looks better. And I think that's the same message we got from the European Central Bank as well. I think in general, officials recognize that they need to provide full liquidity still, and they extended their programs like the Bank of Japan did, but they're hesitant about getting too negative because the vaccine and a more promising, say, second half of next year.
So, Mark, does this mean that everyone's gotten maybe a bit too complacent when it comes to long-term policy out of central banks? Look, central banks have been easy for a long time, and I understand the argument that the economy was struggling even before the pandemic, and the Fed was even getting easier with their monetary policy before this pandemic. But now it does seem like everyone has just accepted that the Fed is going to remain easy through, now some of the estimates I'm hearing, 2023. It sounds like you think that might be a bit far out. We might need to reevaluate when we get, say, halfway through next year.
Well, I think that that's partly the game that is going to be being played, is who is the first to begin changing. And so I think there's a couple of candidates. I think that Norway this past week indicated that they are one of the leading candidates, and they were talking about a possible rate hike, not in 2021, but in the second half of 2022. I think Canada is another candidate. I mean, we have to get past what I would imagine to be an early election sometime next year. And I kind of imagine that the election will be called after we get the checks go out and the fiscal stimulus, the spending increases, and when the vaccine rollout, that'd seem to be the best time to have an election, when people can go to the polls and people feel good about things, they're optimistic. But I think that that the Bank of Canada, it won't surprise me that they're among the first to taper as well. And I'd also put the Bank of England not so far behind either, especially given the turmoil after Brexit. I would not be surprised if they too become more prudent before fiscal policy does.
What do you think is going to cause this change in policy then? Is it going to be market moves? Is it going to be economic data? What will spur this potential change?
Well, I think that Norway is looking at higher inflation. My sense is for the Canada, why is the Bank of Canada still buying something like 4 billion Canadian a week in bonds? I'd say is because it's not as much of it provides like smoother functioning capital markets. And so what gets the central banks to pull back is that the markets are performing fine, it appears, and that the support for the economy, when we get the vaccine, the economy begins going, normalizing again. And I just think you have to look at these forecasts, weak Q1, better Q2, and then a very strong second half.
All right, let's also talk about the U.S. dollar, because that was another story this week as the dollar did drop below 90 on the dollar index. Has recovered a little bit today on Friday, but the dollar remains weak. Obviously, a lot on the back of the Fed remaining extremely easy. But do you think finally this dollar sell-off is over? Or on the alternative, are we going to get a bigger, larger degree breakdown?
Yes, yeah, so I'd say yes, in the sense that short term, and we look what's happening. And that I'd rather break the dollar down now instead of just talking about the dollar in general. Look at a couple of pairs. Look at the dollar, the U.S. dollar against the Canadian dollar. We're closing really on the week's high, and we're taking out a downtrend that's been in place since early November. So I see consolidation, correction there. Same general story in against Mexico. The British pound has given back about a cent of its gains on the back of nervousness about the Brexit stuff. So kind of put that to the side. I'd say that the Chinese RMB is also moving broadly sideways. So where's the strength? Aussie remains strong, and I think that's part of the reflation trade. The euro is also strong, and I think that's the notable thing I would say about this week's price action in the weak dollar, is that the last time that the dollar or the euro moved above 120 in early September, we had a couple of ECB officials talk about it. Now, the dollar is racing towards 123, and there hasn't been a peep. Similarly, back in early November, when dollar yen broke below 104, both the Japanese Prime Minister and the Bank of Japan governor spoke about the undesirability of the volatility. This week, yesterday, it dipped below 103, and everybody was quiet. So I think that the market feels that they haven't found, if there's a pain threshold, we haven't found it yet. And so to me, what that means is that we get these periods, like I say, with the Canadian dollar right now, or the Mexican peso, or China, where the U.S. dollar goes broadly sideways, consolidates, rather than having a deep type of technical correction that sometimes people look for.
Okay. Now another, I guess, uncertainty heading through this week that is still just hanging over our heads is one being Brexit, but I feel like a lot of people have grown numb to that. And the other being this U.S. stimulus. It sounds like the U.S. is getting closer to passing the stimulus bill, but again, nothing's been passed. And I think a lot of people are sitting there saying, I'll believe it when I see it. Where do you stand on this?
Yeah, no, I think that the Brexit does hang over the markets. You know, the sterling and this optimism early in the week, sterling got up to over 136, so new like 20-month high or something on that kind of duration. It's come off ahead. You know, people are still nervous because we're going to the weekend and anything can happen. I don't know. I had been thinking for a while they weren't going to have a deal. And then when about 2 weeks ago when Johnson and the EC president met, I thought, okay, maybe this is it. Maybe they do meet and they have this political breakthrough. So I'm kind of leaning that they'd reach an agreement. And it just seems to me that, you know, the bill can go. I mean, it can last on even next week. These deadlines don't matter except the one at the end of the year. That's the only one that really means anything. If they do reach an agreement, and I know earlier when we talked about this, We talked about the confirmation process, that the European Parliament needs to approve it, that the different countries have to approve it. But there's loopholes out of that. And they could basically agree to implement it pending the approval process, in effect. So they could theoretically keep negotiating through the holiday period here up to December 31st.
Yeah, this just seems ongoing. One theme, though, for the markets that I think everybody's paying attention to is this potential reflation or inflation trade, especially over the last couple of weeks when you see literally everything moving higher and the dollar moving lower. Even Treasuries moving lower, too. But it does seem like there's a lot of assets and there's a lot of expectation that we could be getting some more inflation or reflation. What do you think is important to note about this?
I think that it's sort of one of these things that we worry about from time to time. But the first thing is sort of like, look at the map. Look at where we've been in our lifetimes, our careers. Inflation and interest rates have generally been trending down. Look at a country like Japan that has debt to GDP of over 200%. They're not only buying government bonds and mortgage-backed securities like the U.S. is, or government bonds, corporate bonds, the way Europe does, but they are also buying equities. They're buying ETFs. And still, Japan cannot like create inflation. I just don't know if, like, I know a lot of us, we sort of like have all been weaned on the same, like, the milk of monetary policy and how money supply growth fuels inflation. And yet in our lives, inflation's been heading down. And the central bank's balance sheet's gotten larger, right? It's exploded since 2008. And yet, even before COVID, we couldn't really get inflation. So, of course, there's going to be some bottlenecks. And you see this in, say, some industrial metals. Copper, I think, 7-year highs. Iron ore, not far behind it. The grains have rallied. And, of course, in the grains rally, that's feed for the livestock. So meat prices have to rise. But is that the stuff of inflation? In the U.S., measured inflation, the two big elements there is housing and health care. And so you really have to break down what really counts as inflation. And so I'd say the measured inflation, is it going to go up? Sure. The Federal Reserve forecast it. The central banks forecast it. The problem is that they've been forecasting it for a long time and they've been wrong. So it's like... could it really be that where they say, all right, we give up, we're not able to achieve inflation, that's just when it comes back? So I kind of think that, yeah, we could get a little bit of an inflation scare, inflation rises a bit, but is it going to be like ruinous inflation? Is it going to be bad? And I kind of don't think so, but it's enough to scare policymakers. And of course, I think that these issues tend to be more political than like moral or ethical, like deficits. I mean, all of a sudden we're going to find that the Republican Party has become, in the U.S., has become fiscally conservative again. And I just think it's like it's sort of just a swing of the political tide. I do think that generally, if we draw any lessons, it's that policymakers take the punch bowl away too early rather than too late. At least that has been the recent history. And I think that, you know, you listen to some of these former policymakers in the Obama administration who, incidentally, are going to be part of the Biden administration. They talk about this as if they recognize this too, that they wish they could have provided more fiscal stimulus. And I think that's what we will see is how countries differentiate themselves in the post-COVID era on how quickly they take away the punch bowl.
So, Mark, you say that policymakers have taken away the punch bowl too quickly in the past. I don't know, man. They have remained pretty easy, especially when it comes to the central bank. So is it going to happen outside of the U.S.? Because even the Fed has said they're okay with letting inflation run over their 2% target. Do you think that's what they're just saying now?
Well, no, I think that as we get there, so you're right, we should draw the distinction between fiscal and monetary policy. I think they often think that we take away the fiscal punch bowl because we're still praying at the altar of budget balances or surpluses, which only a few countries really achieve. But on monetary policy, I think you're right that monetary policy, all we can hope for, I think, in the next year for most countries is some tapering of their purchases. of QE. I think that rate hikes probably will be left to a few, maybe a handful of emerging market countries. But I think that we've probably seen the end of the expansion of monetary policy, and that the next big move will be reducing the buying, the tapering of the purchases, and the removal of the emergency facilities.
Okay, Mark. Well, it sounds like next year, undoubtedly, there's going to be a lot to watch, and there are going to be a lot of changes, hopefully, from this last year we just lived through. But again, I've been on record saying I think everyone's getting a little bit too complacent that policy is going to remain as easy as everyone expects throughout next year. But at the same time, so much can happen, especially on in the first part of next year as that vaccine rollout happens, that I think it's hard to truly take a hardcore side of one of those bets. But hey, we'll see how it all plays out. Mark, great chatting with you, buddy. Thank you for taking some time on this Friday. I hope you have a great weekend, and possibly we will be chatting before the end of the year in these next two shortened trading weeks.
Thanks. Good luck, everybody.